CBS World News brings you the CBS Morning News Roundup with reports from its correspondents at home and abroad called in by Alan Jackson. But first, here are the highlights of the news as received up to 8 a.m. Eastern Wartime, Tuesday, August 7th. Tokyo admits extensive damage caused by the atomic bomb at Hiroshima. New air attacks have been thrown against Japan. Washington and other allied capitals are buzzing with speculation about the new bomb and its possibilities. Now here's Alan Jackson with a CBS feature, News of the World.
Almost 24 hours have passed since we first learned of the atomic bomb and its use against the city of Japan. And even now, after hearing many times the description of this new weapon, its capabilities continue to tempt human imagination. Our senses reel in awe from the staggering import of this new advancement in science. Words written and spoken on the subject since the announcement first came from President Truman about 11 o'clock yesterday morning already are encyclopedic in volume. And yet the subject grows more interesting and fantastic with each new detail, however minute. What this new discovery can mean for a peacetime world, even though its commercial possibilities lie years, if not generations ahead, is almost beyond the comprehension of mere humans. One bomb has been tested, and results were noted for hundreds of miles around. One bomb has been dropped on a Japanese city. So far, headquarters hasn't been able to determine the amount of damage caused, or photographic planes that flew over the ill-fated town of Hiroshima several hours later still were unable to pierce the heavy pall of smoke and dust that clouded out that particular spot of Japan. Tokyo radio this morning finally acknowledged the use of the atomic bomb against Hiroshima and admitted that extensive damage was done. Apparently, the damage was so great that the Japs aren't sure yet what hit the place, for they speak of bombs in the plural, though headquarters tells us that only one bomb was dropped. And a few moments ago, the Japanese Domain News Agency, in another broadcast from Japan, said that the atomic bomb was dropped by parachute and exploded in the air before reaching the ground. That's a Japanese explanation. Earlier, in an indirect reference to the amount of damage caused, the Japs announced that all railroad service in the Hiroshima area had been canceled. Well, that, at the moment, is about all we know of what happened when the atomic bomb landed in Hiroshima, Japan. More figures and revealing descriptions of the damage undoubtedly will be available later, when the skies above Hiroshima clear sufficiently for our airmen to fly over and view the results of their work. In comparison with this history-making development, other activity on the war front is practically routine in character, but it's just as important nevertheless. Tokyo tells of new Mustang fighter plane attacks against the Tokyo area this morning, and also speaks of British planes in action out there, perhaps British land planes flying against Japan for the first time. That's only a guess so far, for there's been nothing on this from headquarters. Headquarters does tell us of a B-29 strike against the big Toyokawa naval arsenal yesterday noon, and an attack against a port in Kyushu by some 400 fighters and bombers of the Far East Air Force based on Okinawa. Excellent results in both cases. Chinese troops have captured another road junction about 125 miles southwest of Canton, tightening their grip on a 50-mile stretch of the so-called invasion coast west of Hong Kong. Thus, the war against the Japanese goes on. But underneath all the news is a feeling of bigger developments to come as a result of the atomic bomb. Some Washington sources, for instance, are speculating that perhaps Tokyo itself, or one of Japan's other large industrial cities, might be the next target for the atomic bomb. In England, London newspapers this morning are speculating that a new surrender ultimatum to Japan may be likely soon. Even in Germany, a country blasted from one end to the other by the ordinary TNT type of bomb, there is reaction to the use of an atomic bomb on Japan. For that and other news, we take you now to Berlin. Catherine Clark reporting.
The first American newspaper will appear in the streets of Berlin tomorrow, and the first edition will headline the use of atom bombs against Japan. Germans are very interested in the Pacific War. They want us to win. American soldiers with whom I talked today are fascinated by the story of the atomic bomb. First, because they feel it will shorten the war. Second, because they think American scientists are, as one of them said, pretty smart guys. Germans also hope the atom bomb will shorten the war. Their reasons are personal. Some because they think we will then be stricter with the Russians. They feel we have cotton to the Russians now as potential allies. Others believe that they expect us to give them food when the supply job to the Pacific is not so immediate. One of the jobs of the new American-sponsored paper in Berlin will be to try and correct that impression. This first American newspaper will have a circulation of 200,000. It will be larger than the Russian-sponsored papers, even larger than the British paper. When the proper time comes, we will withdraw, of course, and leave it to Germany. It is conceivable that the time of withdrawal may well be governed by the time of Russian withdrawal from the news business in Berlin. Our paper will be published in the Olsen House, the largest publishing house in Europe before the war. Its American editor will be Captain Hans Wallenberg, who once edited the oldest and most respected paper in Berlin. He has returned to conditions far from modern. News is gathered by German reporters who cover the city on bicycles, and distribution is by motorcycle. In Berlin, new organizations are getting underway every day. The American Forces Network, run by and for American soldiers, has begun broadcasting here.
You've heard Catherine Clark reporting from Berlin. And now for news from Russia, we call in a Columbia correspondent in the capital of the Soviet Union as we take you to CBS Moscow, Farnsworth Fowle reporting.
President Truman's announcement of the use of the first atomic bomb against Japan appears in all the papers here this morning and has also been broadcast by Moscow Radio. It will be recalled that the joint ultimatum of America, England, and China calling on the Japanese to surrender immediately was issued in Potsdam during the Big Three conference. This suggests a high degree of coordination of diplomatic and military strategy against Japan. The Japanese won't get much comfort from the news that the Chinese Prime Minister, P.G. Soon, and his new foreign minister are expected in Moscow today. They're coming to continue the discussions that were interrupted when the Soviet delegation had to leave for Potsdam. During his visit last month, P.G. Soon was also acting as foreign minister of China. When he returned to Chongqing, he gave up this additional assignment. This was evidently no reflection of the nature of the negotiations or of any change in Chinese foreign policy, as is shown by the fact that Ping will continue to preside over the Chinese delegation. Besides, the promptness of the Chinese to resume the conversations with the Russians at the earliest possible moment shows that they think these negotiations are very important at the present time. Over in the Sandy Islands and inlets of the Western Baltic, remnants of the beaten Germans are still active. The Soviet garrison on the island of Rugen, opposite the southern tip of Sweden, has been giving the story to a correspondent of Red Star. It seems that German submarines and light surface craft are still prowling around, basing themselves on deserted islands and occasionally raiding other parts of the coast. One night, four German soldiers landed on Rugen to give themselves up to the Russians because they'd run out of food and water. They said that these groups are split three ways. Some want to go to Sweden and be interned, some want to give themselves up in the fatherland, and some, the real bitter enders, propose to continue with a career for which they are well qualified, the profession of piracy. That's the news picture in Moscow.
The town of Norwalk, Connecticut, is planning an unusual sort of day tomorrow. Although it will be only the 8th of August, sleigh bells will ring, and in the streets, a snowman will glisten. Tomorrow's the day that Santa Claus, changing his usual traveling plans, arrives in Norwalk to help the town celebrate Christmas for its fighting men. It's the Christmas that Norwalk's fighting men missed last year while they were on a European battlefield, and a Christmas that most of them likely will spend in the Pacific this year. Many of the Norwalk servicemen are home now, enjoying 30-day redeployment furloughs before moving on against Japan. Shortly after arriving home, the boys got to talking to their folks and agreed that the thing they missed most while fighting was Christmas at home. Then the city fathers and Norwalk merchants decided that the boys would celebrate the holiday, even on a hot day in August. An ice company has agreed to furnish sufficient ice snow to make a snowman. Christmas trees have been cut, and the ornaments are ready. The women folk are cooking turkeys, and businessmen are buying gifts and wrapping them in gay colored paper. Here at home, Washington, as other Allied capitals, is buzzing with the news of the atomic bomb, the tremendous secret that was kept so well for so long. the importance the discovery will have in the Pacific War and what it may mean in the years of peace ahead. For that news, we take you now to CBS Washington, Gunner Back reporting.
This city, where the atomic bomb had much of its origin and proved to be the war's best-kept secret, this morning is like any other city in the world, in that it's trying to comprehend what the atomic bomb is going to mean to the future. The announcement of the capture of atomic energy is reaching all corners of Washington this morning. The wives of officers and civilians, for example, officers and civilians who worked on it since 1939, are learning for the first time why their husbands were so frequently late for dinner and so often mysteriously out of town. President Truman has charged Congress with the care of this discovery that will ultimately revolutionize our way of life. And congressmen this morning are trying to find out how great that responsibility is. Only a few knew much about the progress of the atomic research. In the embassies, no doubt, diplomats this morning are pondering the significance of the new age of atomic energy in international relations. And Washington has had its wilder kind of speculation, too. In response to requests, officials at George Washington University say they doubt that the faint earth murmur recorded on their seismograph on Sunday, the day the first atomic bomb was dropped on Japan, was set in motion by that explosion. As far as the war is concerned, military observers here don't detect any disposition yet on the part of the Army to think that the war will end quickly. But the significance of this new weapon is being driven home to the Japanese in day and night broadcasts by shortwave to the main islands. These broadcasts stress President Truman's promise that more and bigger atomic bombs are on the way. Observers here predict that there'll be another official surrender ultimatum, possibly with a 48-hour time limit. Either before or probably after the ultimatum, if there's a rejection, it's believed here that the 20,000-ton TNT force of the next atomic bomb will be dropped on Tokyo itself. In Congress, Chairman Thomas of the Senate Military Committee says his group is ready to expedite legislation setting up a peacetime control commission over the sensational discovery as requested by President Truman. Senator Thomas felt that the new bomb will shorten the war materially. Senator O'Mahony of the Appropriations Committee said that Congress will quickly vote the money to turn research in atomic energy toward its distant goal of replacing coal, oil, and other power sources. That goal, the Secretary of War and President Truman agreed, is really far distant. And there's no question in congressional mind so far that the new discovery must remain under government control. The public as a whole must have access to it, Senator O'Mahony said. It can't be allowed to go into private domain. But frankly, Congress yet hasn't had a chance to look fully at its new responsibility in handling a force that promises to reorganize our economy. This is Gunner back in Washington, returning you to Alan Jackson in New York.
Excitement continues high in the town of Oak Ridge, Tennessee today, following the dramatic revelation that Oak Ridge is the home of the mighty atomic bomb. For the first time since the vast project was begun slightly less than 3 years ago, some 75,000 residents of Oak Ridge now know what was being manufactured there. Surprise was complete and widespread when the secret was first released in Washington yesterday. Newspapers sold in Oak Ridge for $1 apiece. Thousands of workmen employed on the project heard the news with as much surprise and exhilaration as anyone else throughout the country. They remained at their jobs without celebration. And that's the top news from Oak Ridge. One more note from Europe this morning. A reporter in Frankfurt says that because of the unsurfaceable condition of many railways in Europe, it now appears there can be no early homeward movement of the 900,000 Poles abroad except on foot. As a result, the coming month may see thousands of displaced Poles strung out along the ruined roads of Europe in an effort to reach their homes before winter closes in. An Allied officer who is in communication with all major camps where Polish displaced persons are quartered says the trek homeward by foot will be organized into groups of about 1,000 persons each. In today's CBS Morning News Roundup, you've heard the reports of Catherine Clark in Berlin, Farnsworth Fowle in Moscow, and Gunner back in Washington. This is Alan Jackson reporting from New York. This program has come to you from CBS World News. Our next regularly scheduled news summary will be heard over most of these stations at 9 o'clock Eastern Wartime. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.